The U.S. Supreme Court upholds the law banning TikTok. But will it go away or be saved?
The Biden administration has also indicated that they won't force the ban and will leave it to the next administration to determine.
And days before leaving office, President Joe Biden declares the Equal Rights Amendment is law of the land.
I want to praise President Biden for doing the right thing and recognizing that the Equal Rights Amendment is already the law of the land.
Join us now on the Voice of America as we explore the issues in the news. I'm Scott Walterman in Washington.
And I'm Lori London. The U.S. Supreme Court has upheld a law that bans TikTok in the United States. The court ruled Friday that the risk to national security posed by the app's ties to China overcomes concerns about limiting speech. However, it now appears unlikely that the law will be enforced. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump says he likes the app and thinks he can work out a deal to keep it up and running. We hear more now from Reuters correspondent David Doyle.
You know, I have a warm spot in my heart for TikTok.
The U.S. Justice Department has argued Chinese control of TikTok poses a continuing threat to national security. That position is supported by most U.S. lawmakers. Free speech advocates, however, argue the law against TikTok evokes the censorship of authoritarian regimes. TikTok, which has 170 million US users, has previously said the Justice Department has misstated the company's ties to China. In 2020, he sought to block the app and force its sale to American companies. But more recently, he has expressed a warm spot for TikTok.
But TikTok had an impact.
Trump met with TikTok CEO in December and has said he received billions of views on the social media platform during his presidential campaign.
That was Reuters correspondent David Doyle. Now, TikTok CEO Shouzi Chu said on Friday he wants to thank Trump for his commitment to work with the company and find a solution that keeps the app available in the United States.
Today, we have more than a billion monthly active users around the world, including over 150 million in the United States. Our app is a place where people can be creative and curious, and where close to 5 million American businesses, mostly small businesses, go to find new customers and to fuel their growth.
And Trump said Friday the decision on the future of the TikTok app will be up to him, but he didn't provide any details about what steps he might take.
Now, Trump did say he and Chinese President Xi Jinping discussed issues, including TikTok, in a phone call on Friday.
Joining us now is Damian Rollison, Director of Market Insights at Soshi, an AI marketing platform.
Thanks so much for being able to take the time to talk to us about this.
Sure.
So, you know, aside from the legal aspects of this, because the Supreme Court upheld the law exists, you know, it's up to the new administration to enforce it, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of will there. We're going to let that play out off to the side. Let's talk about TikTok itself, and let's start with how much it has changed the communicative landscape, both for individuals and businesses.
I think it's introduced a new medium of communication. It's not as though short form video didn't exist before TikTok. It certainly did. But to use it as the primary means of communication is something new. And it's just proved immensely popular to the extent that there's content of any conceivable type on TikTok today. And that's a large amount of the value of the platform. It resides in the extent of content on every topic.
Potentially, apparently worth up to $200 billion.
Right.
There are people that have been interested in buying it. Do you think that's even something that's possible, considering this the Supreme Court decision, it needs to be sold or bought by Sunday? I mean, that is kind of going into the legality, but even if somebody wanted to buy it, if they don't want to sell it because it's such a moneymaker, what do you think about that?
Well, I think one interesting aspect in all of these stories and all of this speculation and moves by different parties is that TikTok itself has been relatively silent. They haven't really revealed too much about what they intend to do, but all indications are that they have no interest at all in selling their platform and that they would rather it were shut down in the U.S. than to go forward with a sale. I have heard, you know, as I suppose we all have, speculation that if the whole TikTok issue gets handed over to the Trump administration, that one of the approaches that Trump and his people might take is to broker some kind of a sale. And I know that there are eager buyers out there. But all of that is predicated on the idea that TikTok would be willing, that ByteDance would be willing, and I don't see that being the case.
And really, I think the main sticking point there is the algorithm and the underlying code, right?
Yes. The most difficult to replicate aspect of TikTok is the algorithm that determines what people see in their feeds. And they would see that as the biggest value, although I would say it's really a combination of that and the organic audience and the content that that audience has created, those two things. So certainly, you know, the fact that there are buyers out there who are interested in acquiring the app without the algorithm, since that would be the stipulation, they're more interested in acquiring the audience and the content.
It's interesting. I was looking at how people are so attached to it that there's this whole other site, Red Note, that people are flocking to, and another site that you wouldn't think of that's benefiting is Duolingo, so people can learn Mandarin.
Yes. But, and again, I'm not the first one to say this, one has to, you know, think through the ultimate outcome Exodus to Red Note, which is also a Chinese-owned app, which is that the same security concerns would very likely put it under the same scrutiny and perhaps get it shut down as well.
Let's talk about the bigger social media world and not even social media, even on the traditional computer. We see this cycle of programs and providers and apps since the tools, you know, started to be public. I mean, Netscape gets replaced by Explorer, gets replaced by Google, gets, you know, and we're still in that world, aren't we? Didn't Instagram become bigger than TikTok anyway?
Instagram, by sheer numbers, is bigger than TikTok and probably covers a broader demographic range. But TikTok is the app that people spend more time on than any other app, which is also an important measure. I think it's proven itself to be, you could use the word addictive, highly engaging. People really want to share on TikTok, but they also want to just sit back and watch video content. So it's really unlocked a kind of user behavior, user experience that is, I would say, unique and, you know, uniquely valuable.
Couldn't that be replicated here in some way?
Sure, it could be replicated, but it's, again, this kind of magic mixture of the algorithm, the user experience, the audience, and the content. And you can't just have one or two of those components. After all, if it could have been replicated, that probably already would have happened. You need a willing audience that flocks to the app and uses it actively and creates value by sharing video content that other people want to see.
Let's say they actually do go about deplatforming, really. Isn't it deplatforming? It's not really shutting it down.
In the United States.
Yeah.
Sure. Uh-huh.
So explain what that actually means.
I mean, it's all a matter of speculation, but the two most likely scenarios that I've heard are, number one, that TikTok electively shutters the app. In other words, it goes dark, perhaps starting on Sunday. And it's just no longer available, or perhaps a message is shown to users saying that this app's not available in your region, your country. So, you know, complete 100% shutdown with no lead time, well, except beforehand. And then the other option is that it is removed from Apple's and Google's app stores. As of Sunday, there are fines, per user fines, that both of those companies would presumably start to incur if they don't remove it from the app stores. And in that scenario, the app is not completely shut down, but you can no longer download it and you can no longer update it. So potentially over time, the user experience degrades to the point where it's no longer usable.
Mm. So theoretically, let's just say the most likely scenario is it stays up and running. It disappears off the app stores because they could get fined under the law. And you just use it till it doesn't function anymore, you know, on the Apple 22, the iPhone 22.
Yes, that's right. That's what I'm describing. I have also heard, though, that internet service providers may decide that they have risk and that they would no longer host the app, or that server companies like Oracle, which TikTok uses, would also shut it down. So there's, again, there's a lot of different scenarios that might play out. It's really difficult to predict exactly what this post-ban world is going to look like. But yes, I would say more people have speculated that it would stay alive but degrade over time, in which case I don't think we have a precedent for what that user experience would look like. But I would assume, for instance, advertisers would flee, U.S. advertisers would, in a scenario like that.
Well, I wonder what will happen between Sunday and Monday when we change presidents and how that all plays out.
Yeah, well, you've probably heard the news. I think this came out yesterday afternoon that Biden administration sources say that they will not enforce the provisions of the ban, specifically that they would not enforce the fees imposed on the app stores. And if that's true, if that's, you know, non-enforcement starts on Sunday and continues to Inauguration Day, then there would be a kind of a handoff to the Trump administration. Trump has vowed to save the app, again, might continue that non-enforcement. And then who knows what, you know, there's a law on the books right now, so that's no joke. Which has just been reinforced by the Supreme Court. So perhaps we would need some action in Congress to make the lifting of the ban permanent.
All right. Well, we'll watch this thing play out in real time. I suspect you're right. I think that they're going to kick this down the field and somehow get rid of the law. Thank you so much for the time and the insight.
Yes, thank you very much.
That was Damian Rollison, Director of Market Insights at AI marketing platform, Soshi.
You're listening to Issues in the News. I'm Scott Walterman with Lori London.
U.S. President Joe Biden called the Equal Rights Amendment, quote, the law of the land on Friday, backing an effort to enshrine the change into the U.S. Constitution more than a century after it was first proposed.
Now, it's unclear what practical impact Biden's comments might have. We get more on this now from Associated Press correspondent Donna Warder.
Biden says, in keeping with my oath and duty to the Constitution and country, I affirm what I believe and what three-fourths of the states have ratified. The 28th Amendment is the law of the land, guaranteeing all Americans equal rights and protections under the law, regardless of their sex. The National Archives said previously that the Equal Rights Amendment cannot be certified because it wasn't ratified before a deadline set by Congress. And on Friday, it reiterated that position, saying the underlying legal and procedural issues have not changed. Presidents do not have any role in the amendment process, but activists gathered outside the National Archives to celebrate Biden's statement, with the ERA Coalition and the Young Feminist Party telling the archives to do its job. Donna Water, Washington.
The amendment's supporters say it's needed to protect against sex discrimination and would help achieve equal pay, while opponents argue that the original timetable to have it become part of the Constitution has already passed and that the amendment is no longer needed. Well, let's get more on this part of the story. Joining us is someone who does believe the amendment is law, Congresswoman Teresa Ledger Fernandez, chair of the Democratic Congressional Women's Caucus.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Of course. It's wonderful to be here to speak about this historic statement made today by President Biden.
So tell us what it really does mean, since the archives have said, you know, they're still not going to publish the amendment.
I think that President Biden's statement regarding the Equal Rights Amendment is essential. We need to go back in history and recognize that the Constitution was designed to be amended. And the Founding Fathers did not put a deadline on equality. They did not put a deadline on amendments. They stated that amendments to the Constitution would be effective upon ratification. I am very grateful to my colleague, Representative Jennifer McClellan. She led the effort to have Virginia ratify the Equal Rights Amendment. And today, President Biden signaled that it was the law of the land. We know that past presidents have declared amendments to be the law of the land, including President Adams. And so I think that this is consistent with precedent over the years of declaring ratified amendments to be the law of the land. And that's what President Biden did today.
And so those past presidents who declared that they were ratified and the law of the land, were they upheld or was it something more symbolic? Obviously, this is it's interesting that this is an amendment that didn't get ratified, equal rights for women, and obviously something women care about. And obviously, he felt it was important enough to do before leaving office. But I would
argue with the statement that it didn't get ratified. The states did ratify it. They took a long time, which is, in my mind, sad that the states would not recognize immediately that declaring that women are equal to men should be a no-brainer, right? It should be something that everybody agrees on. But there was eventually ratification by the required number of states. And we need to simply get it enshrined in the Constitution. I think the American Bar Association and other legal scholars have noted that the archivist has a ministerial duty. It is not her role to determine whether the amendment was ratified in time, and the Constitution doesn't have that. I think we will see some legal battles over this, but it is really not just symbolic, but important what President Biden did today. I would hope that President-elect Trump would also recognize that women are equal in the Constitution. It is an important concept for everybody to acknowledge.
Well, what about those past presidents, and how is it that the National Archives can refuse to
acknowledge, as you said.
Well, we have the American Bar Association of Women Legal Scholars stating that she does not have that authority. And so I think that we look forward to her changing her mind. We are likely going to see some legal wrangling over this, but the president's declaration that it is the law of the land will be very important as we move forward to get this universally recognized.
What is the next step?
I would think that the next step is that it get enrolled, right, by the archivist. But her role is simply to inform the states. The archivist decision is not set out as this is what makes it valid. The Constitution is fairly simple, right? It says that the Constitution may be amended by vote of the states. That happened. And I think that that's really wonderful. Think about it. Who can argue that women are not equal under the Constitution? Most other constitutions have such provisions because it is such an elemental concept. And we need to make sure that that is carried out throughout the United States of America.
But there was language in the original amendment, wasn't there, in the congressional order, 7 years, and they went past the 7 years without the 38 states, and then a later Congress voted to take that 7 year time limit off. But I think that's their point.
Well, I think we go back then to the Constitution and the fact that it did not grant Congress the ability to limit the amendment process. And that's where I would stand, is that the Constitution placed that in the role of the states. Once the Congress acted to move the amendment forward, then it was up to the states to take their action, which they did eventually.
Do you think there's a court fight ahead?
As I pointed out, I think there are a lot of legal battles ahead. But I do think that President Biden's statement is an important part of recognizing that the Equal Rights Amendment has been ratified, should be printed out in the Constitution that I carry with me in my purse and in my briefcase. I want it to be able to show it up and show it's there. And we're going to probably have lots of court battles and legal battles to get it there. But the President Biden's statement is an important step as we enter into those court battles and legal wrangling. We should all ask each other. And we should ask people, answer it. I mean, do you think women should have equal rights?
Well, of course, that is the crux of the debate all these years, isn't it? Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That was Congresswoman Teresa Ledger Fernandez, chair of the Democratic Congressional Women's Caucus.
The archivist, Colleen Shogan, and her deputy, William Bosanco, who are responsible for certifying and publishing new amendments, once they meet the required ratification threshold, say neither they nor Biden can act without Congress or the courts lifting the deadline. In 2020 and again in 2022, the Office of Legal Counsel of the U.S. Department of Justice reaffirmed that the ratification deadline established by Congress for the ERA is valid and enforceable. The OLC concluded that extending or removing the deadline requires new action by Congress or the courts. Court decisions at both the district and circuit levels have affirmed that the ratification deadlines established by Congress for the ERA are valid.
Bottom line seems to be that Biden's statement as he prepares to leave office was primarily symbolic.
Well, that's all the time we have this week. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for being with us.
For news throughout the week, listen to our daily podcast, The Issue, available at voanews.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Join us next week for more Issues in the News.
Until then, I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.